Pat Bamford, Patrick Bamford carrying the ball forward past Odoi, and he plays the ball into the penalty area. Costa! Oh, terrific goal! And Patrick Bamford, goal scorer 1 minute, provider the next.
Here we go with Leeds United. We're gonna give the boys a hand.
Welcome to episode 5 of the official Leeds United podcast, where Jermaine Bedford, Matthew Lewis and Patrick Bamford join us once more. What have we all been up to the last week, lads? Jermaine, I'll go with you first because you're giving us a big thumbs up.
Homeschooling. It's so much fun. It has its challenges, but do you know what? To be fair, my kids are brilliant. They've got the hang of it now. And my little girl especially just goes off on one. She's brilliant. She just deals with it. Would you like a little bit of help, Nola? No, I'm fine. And then that's it. She's cracking on. My little boy, I assume he's the same as Nola, and he's not. If I take my eyes off him for a split second, he's dilly-dallying, he's tapping away, he's singing a song, he's in his own little world. So I have to bring him back in, back down to earth. And I'm very patient, usually. I'm being tested, guys. I'm being tested. I'm not going to lie.
We salute you and many other parents across the land who are currently homeschooling. So well done, Jermaine Bedford. Well done. Matt, what have you been up to since you've been back in America?
I would love to tell you I've been doing all kinds of wild and fantastic things. I've been doing nothing at all, to be honest.
You disgust me.
A new show that I did called All Creatures Great and Small has just been released in the US. So I've been doing a bit of press this week for that. And that's it. That's all I've been doing. I've literally been plugging that and then putting my feet up and playing PlayStation all week.
It looks brilliant, by the way.
Sounds like you're living the dream there, Matt.
Well, nothing else to do, is there?
And Patrick, finally, what have you been doing for the last week? Apart from scoring hat-tricks?
In training, it seems.
I haven't.
We'll talk about that in a bit.
Pretty much the same as Matt, minus the interviews and plugging things. So PlayStation, watching TV, Netflix, training.
What are you watching on Netflix?
this thing called Nightcrawler. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
Oh no, Night Stalker.
What's that about, Pat?
Yeah. It's about this sick guy. Well, a sick guy is in a bad way.
He's a man. He's not like he's sick, man.
Yeah, no. In a bad way. He's a serial killer, basically. And it's the documentary of him when he was in LA, I think it was.
Oh, it sounds good, that. So, yeah. Don't watch it at night time, though.
No, so that's what I did. We went up at about 10 o'clock to watch it in bed. And I rang my mum just before, and she was telling me a story about back home where mum and dad live, that some doctor had a lawsuit against another doctor. They're like 60 years old. And the one who lost the lawsuit ended up breaking into the other one's house and stabbed the other doctor. Like, so she told me that just before I watched The Night Stalker. So we've watched Night Stalker then, which is obviously freaky. It's 11 o'clock, gone to sleep. 12:30, the house alarm's gone off.
No.
Yeah, the house alarm's gone off, right? So Michaela's woke me up and she's like, quick, wake up, the house alarm's gone off. I didn't even hear it. So I've sat up quick in bed and she's ringing the alarm company saying the alarm's gone off, blah, blah, blah. We've got calls from the monitoring system. And she was like, check the cameras. So I've checked all the cameras. I said, everything seems fine. So Michaela's gone downstairs just to check. The side door to the house was just wide open.
No way.
Right, don't tell me but things like that.
I checked all the cameras, went back in time to see if there was anyone coming in or out. Couldn't see anyone, but yeah, the door was just wide open.
No.
And it wasn't open when we went to bed.
Oh, was this after the Brighton game? Because I didn't think you played that badly, to be honest.
No. Wait, was it after the Brighton game? Yeah, it was after the Brighton game.
Oh, God. Right, then we'll move on because seemingly one of the things that you guys listening love the most are the little anecdotes, the little behind-the-scenes things that go on at Ellen Road and Patrick's stories. So please do keep your questions coming in using the hashtag LUFCpod. We've had more questions in this week. Patrick, are you ready for them?
Yep, fire away.
Matt Smidowicz asks, who would you trust to drive you around in a Robin Reliance? We already know it's not Alioski, but who gets the honours?
That's the one with the one wheel, the single wheel at the front.
Three-wheeler, yeah.
Yeah, the three-wheeler.
Only fools and horses, love it.
Do you know what? I'd probably go for You know the translator who does all Marcelo's translating?
Yeah.
He drives Marcelo about, so I'm guessing he's pretty safe driver, otherwise he wouldn't trust him, so I think I'm going to go for him.
He's also like a Cockney Wheeler dealer, isn't he, as well? So yeah, quite good for the old...
Trust him, mate. Sensible fella. Heart on his sleeve and all that.
Oh, I'm sure he'll be honoured, Patrick. And John asks whether you get any sort of training when it comes to social media.
I remember when I was at Forest and the boys do the scholarships, I think that there's a little bit within that kind of, I think it's called the YTS. There's a little bit of training in there. But apart from that, generally, no. I haven't come across anywhere that does specific media training.
You just learn from everyone else's mistakes.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. Are there some people that make more mistakes and fight back more than others?
Yeah, I think so. I think some people you see on Sky, they like slip in the swear words and stuff quite often. And don't know when to bite their tongue. So as Jermaine said, I think you see so many interviews, you think, oh no, I know not to do that next time. When the kit got launched, I can't remember which kit it was. It was one of the three new ones this season. And Alioski had taken a picture on the day that we were doing the shooting, and he sent it to his dad back in wherever he was. And his dad put it on Facebook and it leaked out that way.
And finally, Carlos has been in touch. He says, on Matt's question, RE cards, red cards count across all domestic competitions, but yellow are competition specific, Matt.
Yeah, no, I know. I just think it's stupid.
Well, there you go, Carlos. That's how Matt feels about that.
Yeah, eat that.
Next question.
We're going to talk very quickly about the Brighton game. And Matt, I'm going to come to you first. As a fan, what are your thoughts after that?
Well, I'd say I'm a bit concerned because I don't know if I've told you guys this, but I so in the West Brom game, I've got the Leeds away shorts. And I put them on that morning while my away shirt was in the wash. And it came out just before kickoff. So I put my shirt on and I only realised at half time that I was wearing the full kit. I was sitting on my sofa wearing the full away kit and we won 5-0. Since then, we've lost 3 in a row and I haven't been wearing full kit. So now I'm concerned that I'm going to have to be, you know, full kit. Every game. I mean, if I go to the pub next week and I've got to wear full kit, that's going to be embarrassing.
But it's worth it though, Matt. It's worth it, isn't it?
Yeah,
you're right.
You've got to take it for the team.
All right, mate. Well, I'll do it for you, mate. If I wear full kit and you don't get hat trick, there's going to be trouble.
And Jermaine, what are you feeling after that game?
I'll be honest. There was a part of me that was very frustrated, obviously, because we didn't score. First and foremost, Pat was trying his best not to score, like letting him go through his legs, etc. No, I'm only messing. It's happened to us all, mate. We all it happens. It happens.
That one was offside anyway, so
we'll never know.
Did you get a relief there, Pat? Did you get a relief where you're like, oh, thank that was offside? Like.
Do you know what? I was so frustrated. I think in the first half, I touched the ball like four times.
Six.
So I was losing my
six.
Head.
I was on Sky for you.
Six
yeah,
times.
I was in your corner.
So then when I came across, I wanted to absolutely lever the ball and missed it. And I looked around and obviously saw the flag, whoever crossed the ball was offside. I was like, thank God for that.
Do you know what? it was one of those situations where I just thought, we're dominating possession, creating a lot, but in terms of the final third creativity, it just wasn't there. And we just didn't seem to click.
Yeah, the final pass.
Yeah, it just didn't seem to click then. So still 12th in the Premier League, still miles ahead of the three teams in the relegation zone, which is ultimately where we need to be above. So taking all things into consideration, I was disappointed, but you know, it could have been worse. They play really, really well out of their skin.
It was just one of those games. It was one of those games that I thought had 0-0 written all over it. I mean, they scored a kind of a crappy goal, really.
Matty's doing well here today, isn't he? Watching his language.
Yeah.
I'm trying so hard.
Every time Matty's coming on, it's just going to be beep, 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 beep.
I know. I get such a like grilling for it afterwards. Anyway, they scored that goal. It was kind of rubbish. And I just felt that people sort of said after the game they deserved to win. I'm not sure. I don't think Leeds deserved to win, but I didn't think Brighton did enough to win that game. I thought it was a 0-0, to be honest. It was pretty dour, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I felt that probably was our worst game because, as Jermaine said, even though sometimes we control possession and that, our actual output in terms of clear-cut chances, I'm not sure how many shots we had on target.
Not many at all.
It was just, for some reason, it was lacking that game. And it was a frustrating game. And you're right, a 0-0 probably was the right result there, because I don't think either team did enough to win it, even though Brighton obviously came out winners.
I imagine you were pretty disappointed after that game. But what's the attitude like in camp now then, Patrick? Is it just you look ahead to the next game?
Yeah, we were frustrated after the game in the change room, and think everyone was a bit down because we knew that that performance was... I mean, we were all blaming the pitch and saying how shocking it was. But we knew that we weren't good enough ourselves. And to be fair, since we've gone back in, it's just been a steady build-up now to the next game. And we actually... Today was weird. We had a day of head tennis tournaments, which is like unheard of.
Wow.
In our training. So I think it was trying to boost the spirits a little bit. Obviously, we had some players playing in the 23s the other day. But I think in general, everyone's upbeat. If you, at the start of the season, if someone said you're going to be 12th with this many points at this stage, everyone would be like, flipping heck, bite your hand off. So I think that they kind of been a little bit harsh on ourselves, or it just shows that how kind of optimistic we are and how much we believe in ourselves that we should be doing better.
Is it frustrating to have this time off now? I mean, I imagine you'd like to get out there and set that right pretty sharpish.
Yeah, it's annoying. Obviously, in the Championship, you play Saturday, Tuesday most weeks. Whereas now we're having, sometimes it's 8 days between a game, sometimes 10, like in this instance. And it's frustrating because you want to put it right straight away.
There's nothing like playing matches. I used to love matches, hate training, unless it was like a Friday fun day.
Miles better,
but yeah, matches, there's nothing like it.
But it was weeks ago, we lost in a match and I was saying how I imagine the players might want a bit of time off. And Beck said, no, the best thing they can have is the fact that they have to go to Villa on Friday. It's going to be the best thing. And I was like, really? He's like, yeah, trust me. And then you went and put in that performance against Villa. So I'm a total convert to that idea of you guys wanting to just put things right and get straight back out there.
Yeah, I think that even if you're tired, like it is better playing games. You don't want a long week, because long week of just training... It's boring compared to games. It's boring training. It's not, you don't get the same adrenaline rush, and it's not quite the same. I know it's a must do thing, but you want to be playing games as much as possible.
Right. Well, we shall move on then, lads, shall we? I think we covered that quite well. Are you all right, Patrick?
Yeah, park the bus on Brighton.
We're done with that.
We felt the energy.
Well, I think it's the first time we've had to deal with that, really. I mean, even when we've lost this year, it's not been like that. I think it's the first time we've had to feel with one was a bit humbling.
Mate, I don't think you just heard what we said, mate. Park the bus, move it on.
Sorry, bus parked. Next one, move
with
on.
With Jose Mourinho in it, mate. Come on.
Yeah. Right, I've got a task for you, lads. Are you ready for this?
Ready to roll.
Over the course of the rest of the season, I thought it'd be a nice little challenge if you three tried to pick the best Premier League era Leeds 11. And it only seems right to start with strikers, right? Matt, I was going to say, Matt, given who we're working with here, I can't imagine who you're going to nominate, lads, at all.
I'm pretty sure he's playing a two up top.
Just say it better be.
Well, one of them's Becchio, so you two are fighting it out. Yeah.
Jermaine, I'll come to you first. What do you think you need to be a good striker?
Confidence. Absolute confidence. And you have to have the ability to create space for yourself as well. Selflessness is a must, and a clinical edge. Not much, just those. So for me, I've always loved playing up front with players that are almost the contrast, the opposite to the type of player that I am. So I've loved playing up front with Luciano Becchio. I've loved playing up front with Trezor Kando. I've loved playing up front with Luis Saha, David Nugent. You know, there's lots of players. Jamie Vardy, is similar type of player to myself. But the former players that I mentioned, they were the strong guys who like to fight people and pin and set and create space and opportunities for other players to run in behind. They do the horrible work, the dirty work. And, you know, I reap the rewards for that. And I've always thought that those contrasting styles always worked an absolute treat.
And Pat, would you agree with that in terms of mentality? And also, do you think with strikers, do they seem to have a different kind of mentality to the other players?
Yeah, I think so. I think when Jermaine said playing as a two, I don't think I've ever played as a two. So I've always, since I've been playing, I've always either played as the one up front, or when I was younger, got shifted out on the wing.
You'd have loved playing up front with me, mate, I tell you.
Have to go back a few years, but yeah.
Ah, there it is. There it is. I set myself up.
But yeah, I think with a striker, that you can't be the same as your teammates. And there's going to be times where your teammates get pissed off at you because ultimately you have to shoot more. You have to be selfish because the more you do it, the more chance you've got of scoring. But I think that what differs sometimes is if, say, for instance, you come off a pitch as a midfielder and you've won the game 2-0, then they're buzzing, like over the moon, over the moon. If a striker comes off the pitch winning 2-0, he's happy. But if he hasn't scored, there's a part of him that's fuming. So yeah. I think that's like the difference in positions, the way you look at the game.
Yeah. It's ego and it's selfish a little bit, 100%. If I haven't scored and we've won 2-3-4-0, I'm happy for the guys that we've won, but there's a massive part of me that's thinking, I shouldn't have passed it to him. I should have gone myself. And that's just the mindset and the mentality of a striker. Like Pat said, if you don't shoot, you won't score. And as a number nine, you're being judged on the amount of goals that you score. Ultimately, that's what everybody says, you know? And if you're not reaching certain targets, then in some people's eyes, you're failing at your job, you know? And they kind of bypass sometimes everything else that does go into being a striker, creating space. And that's why I've always loved playing up front as a two or wide as a three, because I can drift in and out of games, and then in a blink of an eye, boom, I'm in front of the goal 1-on-1 and I chip the goalkeeper. I'm running off into the corner flag celebrating. And then I'll be out of the game again for another 10 minutes. And then blink of an eye, I'm right back in front of the goal, you know? And that's just what you need, but you need a lot of selfless players to be able to have players like that playing with you. And I was fortunate enough to have that.
If you both had the choice, would you have an excellent man of the match game and not score?
No.
Or have a horrible game and score?
Yes.
Horrible game and score.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
All day long.
Because if you think about it...
As long as we win.
Yeah. And if you think about it, when people look back at the score, it's not going to say 2-0 to Leeds, Bamford had an amazing game. It's just going to say 2-0. 2-0, who scored?
Well, I was just thinking about it, because when we were talking about doing strikers, I was thinking all we ever look at is the goals to games ratio. No one's talking about, oh yeah, he didn't score many, but he was great. No one cares about that. How many goals did you score in how many games?
Yeah.
That's all that people are going to remember, isn't it?
Yeah, not going to lie. I looked down the list of strikers that we've had and, you know, I'm quite happy with my return. I'm pretty sure Pat's saying the same, you know?
Yeah, no, mine could be better. Yeah, I'm just having a little...
And for you guys growing up, did you have any inspirations? Who were your favourite strikers when you were growing up watching football?
I've always loved watching Ian Wright, one of my favourite strikers to watch. Just because of a lot of the things that he did when he was growing up. He sort of had similar upbringing to myself and came into the professional game late as well. So, and he was raw pace and raw in front of goal, similar to myself as well. So I loved watching him, and I based a lot of my game around his game. But I used to love watching footballers, not just from England. I used to love watching them from Italy. Gabriel Batistuta was one that I loved watching. Franco Zola, another one I loved watching. In Spain, watch Raul. I was a massive, massive fan. Brazilian Ronaldo, Bebeto, so many. Stoichkov as well, Bulgaria. Like, all of these players I used to watch and try and emulate certain parts of their game and bring them and try and incorporate them into my game and see if I can improve what they've done, what they've already mastered. See if I can pick that up and try and make it work for me in my own way and try and better their return, their goal ratios. It never happened, don't get me wrong, but I used to love watching them and trying different things. So yeah, all of those guys.
And what about you, Patrick?
I think Torres was one. Loved watching him when he was at Liverpool. I thought he was brilliant. So him, Van Persie, and then Drogba at Chelsea. Just as Jermaine says, you try and pick little bits out that can help you. And obviously you're not going to be as good at it as they are, but it still helps the game.
Mm. It's fascinating, isn't it, that those people that you've watched growing up have quite literally then directly impacted and helped you get to where you are now. And they... they might not know it at all. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I've DM'd them all, but none of them have got back to me.
how's your Spanish?
Who is this guy?
What? and Matt, obviously, you know, you don't play at an elite level, but who was it for you when you were going? No, you
what a shot! Love that.
An elite level.
Get him again.
Never even seen me play, and she's already judging me.
This is the closest he's getting to winning a row, mate, I tell you.
You're quite right. I do not play anywhere near an elite level.
But if you had, who would have been your inspiration?
Well, I was a bit of a chubby youngster. A little lazy. So, you know, Matt Viduka was always a bit of an inspiration for me. But no, in truth, like that is very true though. Like I remember sort of growing up and I'd play football with a couple of mates on the street and I would always sort of...
Be in goal.
I'd always be Matt Viduka. I couldn't score, but that's what I'd always want to be. Because I always wanted to be a striker. I always thought being a striker was... I guess you say it's the glory position of getting the goals, you know, but I always wanted to be, and they were the players that I was naturally drawn to. I remember one day on my own being out and trying to recreate that Michael Owen goal against Argentina in 98. And I was just like, on my own, no goalkeeper, no defenders. And I would just do it like for a whole day, just trying to recreate like that Michael Owen goal.
Like dribbling around rocks. How many times did you get tackled?
Too many. Too many to admit on this podcast. But yeah, strikers fascinate me. I just think they're really, really interesting. It's almost like, I know it's a team game, but it's almost with a striker, it's almost... I guess a goalkeeper's similar, but it's almost as individual as you're going to get in a team sport.
Yeah. Have you ever, guys, Patrick and Jermaine, have you ever come across jealousy from your teammates or anything, being the strikers?
Not so much jealousy. I think I've had it where... So I've had it in terms of penalties. I remember one time I was at Middlesbrough and penalty to take it gets named before the game or before the season or whatever. And the other striker wanted the penalty and he's kicked up a massive fuss. And there's times like that where you're thinking, he's trying to compete with the goals there. But when it comes to, if you have an argument in a game, generally it's brushed off in the change room after. So I think that there is always that competitive edge when you're playing it, like, say me and Jermaine are in the same team, like we'd be mates, but secretly we both want to beat each other how many goals have got.
Yeah, it's like a one-up syndrome, isn't it? Oh, you scored one today. Right, I'm going to score two in the second half.
Look, Salah and Mane.
Yeah, exactly.
So that it's like that.
It's all friendly until it's not.
Yeah, I was going to say.
How many times are you going to take the ball off me? You're taking the mick out of me now. Like, yeah, I've had that. Do you know what? Penalties seem to be the biggest one. Like... There are moments where the ball's you've dribbled past a couple of defenders and you've tried to slot the ball past the goalkeeper who's got a little bit of a touch on it and it's trickling in. It's going in, but it's going slowly. And you just see the other striker just going hell for leather, chin up, chest up, just running as fast as they can, trying to get on the end of it, sliding in. Like David Nugent when he scored for England. You know, his one game, one goal for England, he pinched it off the line. You know, it was borderline in. I think there was a fraction of the ball that was already over the line, and he just helped it on its way. Nobody remembers that. Well, everyone remembers that bit, but they also remember he's got the goal for England as well. He scored for England, so you know that comes into it. But
not gonna lie, you'd do the same, wouldn't you?
I've done the same.
I'd do the same.
I've done the same. Most teams I've played for, I've done the same thing. Hey, listen, like you said, yeah, at the end of your career, you look back and you say, how many goals did I score? 100 and something goals. Oh, no way. You don't say, how many goals did I score? Oh, 170 something goals. Yeah, but I stole like five or six of them on the line. Nobody cares. It's the overall number that's relevant.
Yeah, I've got Brian Dean 38 goals here. I don't know how many of those were tapping, but
my point proven.
I just want to talk about penalty. I want to ask you about penalties because that must be the loneliest thing that a player can do is step up for a penalty. And I remember talking to Kevin Sinfield, Leeds Rhinos, when he used to take conversion kicks and he could kick them from anywhere because he used to talk about how. When he was in a full stadium in a final or whatever, and he had to kick to win it or to tie the game up or whatever, he'd imagine that he was back on the training pitch and everything would melt away and it was just him, the ball and the sticks. And I thought that was a fascinating mentality that he had the ability to do that. And obviously football fans can be a little bit more toxic, a little bit more in your face. When you're in front of the, when you're on the penalty spot and you're in front of it, it's a massive kick. You know, you're not winning, you're not 4-0 up. It's a massive kick, pressure. Where did you two go to try and score?
Well, normally I have a routine just before I put the ball down, I know where I'm going. I know where I'm putting the ball. And at times I've missed actually for Leeds. So one I remember is QPR away, I think it was last season. I changed my mind as I was running up to the ball. So whenever I've changed my mind, I've missed. So I try and as I'm putting the ball down, I know where I'm going and just try and hit it hard. And if the keeper gets there and I've hit it hard, fair enough. But then if you miss it, like the one at QPR was a P roller. Keeper saved it. I was kicking myself. I don't really.
And how does the
fans
the fans affect you?
It depends what the score is, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it depends what the score is.
It does. I remember the other one I missed at home, Millwall, when I went down the middle. I actually heard the fans. I could kind of. I wasn't nervous before I took it, but as I was walking back from the ball, I could kind of feel like a little bit of tension, and so you shouldn't really feel it, but yeah, it sometimes happens.
But is there like a place that you go to in your mind? Like, Jermaine, did you manage to sort of zone out everything else and just be in your own head?
Yeah. Do you know what? There's same as Pat. The times that I've missed penalties, I've changed my mind at the last minute and it doesn't help. And there was really no reason for me to have changed my mind, because if I'd just gone where I planned to go initially, the goalkeeper's dived the wrong way. So it would have been a guaranteed goal. But I changed my mind at the last minute and that's happened. But when we played Spurs in the cup and we were 2-1 down, and I think it was the 93rd, 94th minute. I can't remember exactly. I won a penalty. So I'm standing in front of it. I've got a couple of Spurs fans there and then the Leeds fans bang right in the corner, right next to me as well. Just clearing my mind of everything, taking myself, it's similar to what you said a minute ago, Matty, taking myself back to the training ground, not worrying or thinking about the noise that's going on around me, taking my time, getting my heart rate to relax, breathing deeply, just chilling out. And, you know, you find yourself in, it's bizarre. It's like the eye of the storm. So in the middle of a storm, it's so calm. You know, as soon as you step outside of that, it's carnage. Whether you score, whether you miss, the carnage will then immerse you and just fill you with random emotions or whatever feelings are going to come next with either scoring or missing. And in that moment, as soon as my foot connected with the ball and it flew into the top corner, it was like a massive eruption of emotions and the fans going loopy because we're not out of the cup. We're in. We've got another shot bringing Spurs back to Elland Road, obviously. And it was literally the last kick of the game as well. That was incredible.
Wow.
But you have to take yourself out of it. You have to put the occasion to one side. If you don't, and you let the occasion get the better of you, and you find yourself being immersed in that, literally anything could happen. That's 9 times out of 10 why you see penalties sky, like going over the crossbar.
Yeah,
Matt, I know it's slightly different, but can you relate to that?
To a degree. The thing about my job is that it's obviously
you just read. It's easy.
Pretty much is that, you know, outside of I mean, that is pretty much all I do, let's be honest, you know what I mean? Outside of the theatre, you know, you get a second chance. You know, if you miss the penalty, you get another go at it, so it's not you know, it's not the end of the world. But certainly in the theatre, when it's, you know, you only get one run, it's about exactly that. It's about finding the position where you can allow yourself to let everything else melt away. But that only comes from the preparation that happens beforehand. And if you don't feel confident, if you don't feel ready, if you don't feel prepped enough, you don't know your character enough, that's when these doubts creep in and suddenly you realise the person sitting on the front row, you recognise, you hear the switch rustling, you can hear all this stuff, But if you've done all your prep and you fully are immersed in the role and in the character, then you kind of hit like an autopilot and everything else disappears and all your inhibitions go out the window. And you genuinely forget everyone else sort of just disappear. You get like it's like a tunnel vision. It's I thought Beck saying there that the eye of the storm is really interesting because it's the same kind of feeling. Mm. There's all this carnage going on, and then suddenly just it's gone. And I said it in an interview last week. It's what sportsmen call in the zone, and you do get there.
But Matty, you know, so say for instance, when you're obviously performing in a theatre, the crowd are going to be there. Have you ever been on like either a Harry Potter movie or another set where you've been filming out in the public and everyone else is just going to kind of about their normal stuff? And you've got to kind of not be distracted by people stopping and gawping and stuff like that.
Not so much with Harry Potter, because they were pretty all over it. You know, we'd have like a 2 mile like radius squared off with no one allowed to come anywhere near us, even when we're on location. But with I've done other smaller stuff where, I mean, even on All Creatures Great and Smaller, we just filmed up in Grassington. The town was still operational, and we were filming, and the security were trying to keep people out the way. But I remember there was this old lady, bless her, and I guess she was dressed like she was in the show. Like she was still dressed like the 1930s.
No way.
So she walked out of a sweet shop or something, and the security just didn't pick her up. And she just kind of walked straight through, and she was just like, oh, hello. It's just in the middle of this thing. She had no idea what was going on, bless her. But it does happen occasionally.
When you're on stage, obviously you've got a script, and if you know it word for word, it's perfect. But have you ever had a moment where you've just gone completely blank and almost blagged it and thrown in a couple of lines that you feel would work anyway?
Yeah, that happens. Probably if you've ever been to the theatre, it probably happened that night.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, with the exception of Shakespeare, you know, which is something that has to be, you know, it's iambic pentameter, and you've got to keep it to the rhythms. With the exception of that, it's probably happened if you've been to the theatre. It's something that happens because someone's forgotten, and you'll see it on the stage when, like, you might not notice. I mean, hopefully you won't notice it, but I've had it where I've missed a line, and I can just suddenly see the fear in the other actor's eyes as they realise that they've missed a line, and then they very quickly because the material at the back of your hand, and as I say, you're in it, so the response just comes. It's really hard to describe, but I guess as a sportsman you'll get it. It's like a pass you were expecting, but you just kind of, your instinct takes over and you just go with it.
Yeah.
It happens, and the flicker of fear is gone instantly, and no one in the crowd ever knows the difference. Or it'll happen through crowd participation. The thing is that a player only really takes life once it's in front of a live audience, because you don't know how they're going to react. You know, suddenly there might be something that's incredibly funny that none of you found the joke when you were rehearsing, but the audience find it really funny. And so you have to use that and take a beat or whatever. And of course, that can make you laugh sometimes, and you've got to try and work around that. But I will almost guarantee if you've been to the theatre, you've probably seen something different than what they were planning to do.
Wow. That is fascinating.
I was wondering if either of you two, and I know that obviously Pat is still playing, so he might not want to answer this, but I'm wondering if there was a goalkeeper or a centre-half, like someone who you just felt was in your head, that you, whenever you came up against them, you were just like, oh man, this is like, they know me. I'm really struggling every time I play them.
Do you know what? Not really, because I've had duels with goalkeepers, many, many a goalkeeper. There's been broken nose and cracked jaws and all sorts. You know, that's the good old days of before VAR, where contact was allowed, you know. I remember I had a... It wasn't so much I was worried about the goalkeeper being in my head, but it was more the rivalry between the two teams, and we just didn't get on because of that. And it's David Ford, the Millwall goalkeeper. And I remember we were at Elland Road, we're playing Millwall, and we just won a corner. And I'm standing on the goalkeeper, as I normally did. And out of nowhere, he just came down, just back studs, which were massive. They were like... two, three inches long, right on my big toe. Broke my big toe. I didn't know it broke my toe at the time. But my initial reaction was to lash out, and I elbowed him right in the jaw, cracked his jaw, got booked for it. And then retrospective action. I got a red card, 5 games, dirty fine. It wasn't nice. But no, in relation to your question, he's just one that I had a running rivalry with up until the latter stages of both of our careers, when we were fine, we were cool with each other. I've had defenders who I've loved playing against more so than goalkeepers I've been worried about. I've always enjoyed playing against John Terry because of, he's never known how to deal with me. You know, my movement, my pace, a little bit unorthodox in some of the things that I did as well. And he just hated it. And I played against him 4 or 5 times and scored 3 or 4 goals against him, like in multiple games. So I've always loved that. Was he at Chelsea when you were there?
Yeah, I've got to be honest. He was actually really nice.
He's a nice guy, yeah?
Yeah, he was a good captain. Like, he put a lot of time aside for the young lads, made you feel welcome and stuff. So, he's a good guy.
Did you like playing against him?
I'm going to be honest, I've never played against him. In training, he was one who wasn't scared to, like, even if you're young, he'd go down the back of your heels and stuff. So I think he was good for youngsters, like, toughened you up and got you ready. But I haven't played against him in a match.
Go on, and let's say your goalkeepers. He's trying to avoid this question.
My goalies. I'm thinking, it's not so much goalies. That I don't worry about goalies. I study them before the game and see where they struggle or where they let in most of their goals.
So that's interesting. I think that's really interesting that you have to do all that stuff. Like, when you talk about preparation, you actually study goalies' weaknesses, do you? Like near post, far post, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so we'll look at it before the game, and then in the changing room, our goalkeeper coach will come to me with an iPad. And he'll show me like probably 5 or 6 clips of people going through one-on-one with him, whether the keeper drops down early, like how he spreads himself, whether he leaves a gap between his legs, whether he saves more with his feet, whether he can't dive to one side or get down low or whatever. So you just have it in your mind. I mean, obviously when you go through on goal, you're not thinking, oh God, this keeper does this, but it just kind of puts it into your mind. So hopefully subconsciously you're going to do it. But yeah, that's with the keepers. In terms of being scared of any, it's more like certain defenders I hate playing against. I remember there was one, and I don't know why, he's not like, I don't want to be disrespectful, but he's not like a top tier defender. He actually, I think he played the other day for Crawley. Was he called Craig Oliver or Oliver Craig? Pretty sure he played for Crawley. And he used to be at Brentford when I was at Milton Keynes. I'm not joking yet. I must have got punched straight in the jaw 3 games in a row from him when we played him.
No
at
way.
At corners, he always used to lamp me and never got caught. So I just, and I was only 18, like 18, 19. I thought, what is this? I come from 21's football. I get him.
This is men's football. I don't like it. Let me go back.
Right, we'll move on, shall we? We are gonna fill other positions at various points over the coming weeks, but it's worth us quickly deciding a formation. Are we happy to pick a straight 4-4-2?
Yeah, I'll go with 4-4-2.
4-3-3.
He's trying to make sure he's got a chance to get in there, isn't he?
I'm not silly, lads. I'm not silly. Playing the law of averages.
Do you know what? Put it as a diamond, then we can squeeze a striker as a 10. Drop one back.
Hey, I like that. I'll play the 10. I'm happy, right, whatever, so you lot want to do. On. I'm happy.
Oh, we'll do the 4-3-3, what backs
Yeah, 4-3-3 backs. Yeah. Patrick, are you happy with that?
Yeah, I'm good with that. I'm just
right, Jermaine's got his own way.
Change her options a little bit. Yeah.
So who are we going up for up front?
What, as the central striker? Central striker, I'm putting Viduka.
I was saying that as well.
Yeah?
I can tell by Jermaine's face in the shot.
And then I'm putting you on the left, Bex. So yes, you can cut in on your right foot.
My favourite position. You could be the gaffer anytime, mate. Flip it up.
You're coming in from the left, and then from the right, do you know what? I was tempted to put Jimmy in there, but I don't think he's got the mobility for a winger.
No, not for me.
Mm. Do you know what? I'm probably going to put Alan Smith in just because I liked him as his work rate. And I know he went to United, but...
it's difficult for me to say, yeah, I absolutely agree with putting myself in there. But I love football, so I'm putting myself in there on the left, on the left of a three. And I'm torn. It's going to sound a little bit bizarre. I like Ross McCormack because of his creativity.
Yeah, he's got a good return.
And just for the people listening to the podcast, we've got a list of players in front of us. And, you know, from the players that are on here, there are a lot of incredible, legendary players, but I'm thinking of players that will benefit. Well, that will work for me coming in from the wing, coming in on the back post.
They'll compliment you, basically. Yeah.
I told you, forwards, we are selfish individuals. So I quite like Robbie Keane.
Robbie Keane was class.
I know. I'm going to go Robbie, and then I'm going to put you in a 10. There you are. Look at that. 4.
Ah, oh, there you go. I can't
play 10.
I'm
talking to him.
Sorry. Right, all right. Go on. I want to find room for Tony Yeboah just because
the rocket.
He can just create magic out of nowhere. I don't disagree with the Smithy choice on the right.
Yeah, I know.
It's a tough one for obvious reasons. I won't even mention the other bloke, the Frenchman. But Smithy, I think we can let that slide because he was special, wasn't he? Mm. And he was all in the Premier League. I think he'd be great out on the right. Mm-hmm. Up front on their own, that's tough, that, for me. Obviously, I've got you two here who could both do that. I mean, when I was like going old, David Healy was my favourite striker when I was younger. Yeah.
Do you know what? He had the best side foot volley I have ever seen. Best side foot volley I had ever seen. I tried it so many times and mine just went over the bar, like in training, over the bar, out of Four Parch, into people's gardens. His were hitting the top corner every single time. Honestly, unbelievable. And he's such a lovely guy as well.
He had the best chant as well. Do you remember when they sing to Away in a Manger?
No, I don't remember it. Sing it to us.
Yeah. I'm not singing the whole thing. Do you know why? Because someone asked me, you know, the Healy bit don't come in until like the fifth line and I'm not singing all of that. But anyway, for people at home who remember, that was one of my favourite chants. Let's think. Right, okay, who have we got?
Much time, mate, so you might want to pull your finger out.
All right, okay, well, I had to put Matt Viduka up front because obviously he played with Smithy, they know each other and he's great holding up the ball and all the rest of it. And then... Pat, you're left-footed. You could play on the left, can't you?
Yeah, I do whatever the manager wants, mate. Put me anywhere. Play wherever you want.
You don't want to cut in on the right foot and kick one out for a throw-in, mate. Come on.
Yeah, cut in on the swinger and shoot.
Oh, yeah. Well, it depends who's in goal, because if you're shooting a cross goal, we'd have to see what goalkeeper coach is saying.
What is going on here?
It up between Bex and Pat. You can both rotate.
Mark Viduka up top. How's that? Unbelievable.
Successfully sat on the fence. Well done.
We got there eventually. Jeez, that was painful, wasn't it, Pat?
I think that took more time than the rest of the podcast, but cheers, lads, we got there. Listen to it now, feel free to use the hashtag LUFC pod and tell us who's going up front for you. Thank you so much for that, lads. Cheers for another great week. I've enjoyed that a lot. And please do keep your questions coming in using the hashtag LUFC pod. All your reviews, subscribes and all that. Everything else that you do. And also next week is the halfway mark of the season, so it feels like the right time to dish out some awards. You up for that, lads?
Awards for us or for the listeners?
Just for us four.
Yeah, nice.
Oh, yeah, we're going to give ourselves some medals next week, Patrick.
I'm hoping to win a signed Pat Bamford shirt.
No problem. It'll cost you 60 quid, but no problem.
Right, thank you so much. That was absolutely wonderful. Cheers, lads. I'll see you next week.
Cheers, bye. Guys.
I wonder who's going to win the most dead rabbits award. I can't wait to find out.